That was cut number 8 from the Red Stick Ramblers, Bring It On Down. This is Sound Health and Good Vibrations on BBS Radio with Sherry Edwards. Welcome to those of you who are joining us tonight for information and options for Sound Health. We have a very special guest tonight who's going to talk to us about homeland security issues, but I have, well, actually 3 announcements before we start with our guests, which I think you'll find very enlightening. And remember our telephone number. If you want to call, 888-268-4313, or you can dial direct at 530-876-3222. The announcement, just 3 short ones. One, for those of you who were attempting to call us last week, send us questions to Attorney Fusatolo about what you can legally say on your website without getting in trouble with the law, or about your services without getting in trouble with the FDA. He can be reached at www.vitaminlawyer.com. We're going to have Ralph back because we didn't have time to cover some very important issues. The second announcement is for those of you who've asked me to teach you to listen to your own signature sound so that you can go into deeper meditation. We're attempting to work that one out. We think it would do better if we did it on an online class separate from the radio show. So those of you who are interested, please get in touch with my office at soundhealth@soundhealth.org. Or call the staff at 740-698-9119. And the last announcement, thanks all of you for written and called. And if I haven't answered you, please get back in touch with me. We're trying to work the bugs out of staying in touch with people. Okay, as we promised when we first started the show, we were going to be talking about sound health, the health of the planet, the health of our political system, the health of everybody, the individual, our national health system. Tonight we're going to add a couple more. The health of our state of trust and the health of our state of security. Maslow says that our number one need to stay healthy is our need to survive and feel secure. And that's what our guest is going to talk about tonight. He's rubs elbows with the very top echelon of our political leaders. I've seen pictures of him with the president when he was performing some of his high-level security duties with Hurricane Katrina. But he's now working outside the military in an attempt to make a difference from the outside in. His name's John Taylor, and he runs a company called Homeland Security Strategy, Inc. And this is your chance to ask him some questions. John, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Dr. Edwards. It's a delight to be on with you. It's been a while since we had a chance to chat, and I'm looking forward to catching up with you.
Well, we first met when you introduced us to a company that you're working with called V International, and they deal with a lot of security issues. I don't know much more about you than that. Can you introduce yourself to the listening audience?
Sure, I'll be happy to. My background is pretty varied. I started out with a little career with the Marine Corps for 4 years. Went on to about a 10-year career in political consulting and ended up working with some presidential campaigns and on Capitol Hill, and then I shifted from that over to business consulting, where I started working in marketing and strategy, and eventually in strategic alliances. And then that's what I was doing on September 11th when the terrorists attacked the World Trade Center and the Pentagon, and at coincidentally, or not coincidentally, there was also an anthrax attack on the country, and that's sort of how I got into Homeland Security. I was called by one of the preeminent anthrax scientists, and he was interested in very busy in the middle of trying to organize some responses and protocols and decontamination strategies. And I was called into his circle to work on the anthrax attacks. I spent about 2 years working exclusively on bioterrorism and the anthrax attacks, and then began to realize that there were some really fantastic emerging technologies that had a lot of potential, not only for Homeland Security, but for law enforcement and the commercial sector and just helping people in general. And one of those technologies is layered voice analysis, which you know a little bit about from our meetings. And it's based on frequencies of all things. And I know that's something that you have a lot of experience with. And so it's been nice to meet you and begin to learn more about this important science.
I have a curiosity before we go on. Did they ever figure out who did these anthrax attacks?
There have not been any charges or arrests in the anthrax attacks.
Okay. Well, we did work with frequencies with 9/11, certainly. We were able to work with some of the engineers there with vocal analysis and then with some of the firefighters, and actually were able to identify through vocal analysis that the Murex was what was causing the fireman's cough, and that's a fire retardant. Is that the similar kind of thing that you did with B Company and looking at security?
No, not really. We're not diagnosing medical issues or evaluating medical problems. What V has is a technology from Israel called layered voice analysis, and it is a software that allows you to evaluate human speech for emotional content. And some of the things we can see are stress and various emotions and deception and a variety of different emotional factors that are contained in the voice as it comes out of the mouth.
I've read about a little bit about this in the Wall Street Journal, and I've seen it on TV. So they're dealing with people who are lying, so that I know it's been used in airports. Can you describe that a little bit, how it's being used?
Well, it has been used in one of the Moscow airports in Russia. And I believe in Russia it was being used to detect drug contraband. And they did a pilot there, and it was highly successful. And they've, to my understanding, implemented it on a broader basis in that airport. And in that particular setting, what the software can do is quickly identify people who have got issues going on or being deceptive in their answers to a couple of quick basic questions in their efforts to get on airplanes. And so we've been used in that capacity in prisons in Israel and here in the United States, and then also with the airport in Moscow.
Do you use the voice layered analysis on anything but like bioterrorism and criminal kinds of things?
Well, we do a lot of work with the federal government. We have 10 federal agencies that are either using us or testing us right now. And we're in the early stages of those relationships. And then we're in a variety of law enforcement agencies around the country, and we've worked on a wide spectrum of different cases, everything from murder and heavy felony cases to sexual misconduct, sexual assault, cases that dealt with parents or people being accused of sexual assault on kids, and then some more mundane cases that have to do with stealing money or stealing property and things like that. So it's very effective in a wide variety of cases. And another interesting thing is that the person doesn't have to actually be hooked up to the machine or to the software to use it. So we can actually go back historically and look at cases where maybe someone gave a false confession or
they were wrongly accused and they're in jail and they're trying to get out. And we've actually been very effective in helping people identify innocent people as well as guilty people. So it's really, it's not something that's just for law enforcement. It's certainly something that's for anybody who's speaking the truth.
So law enforcement people could send you a recording of maybe an interrogation, and you run it through your computer program, and you'll be able to tell them reliably, 90%, 80%, whether this person is truthful or not. Can you describe kind of how that happens?
Sure. How it usually works is the law enforcement agency will have a case where they have an interview of a suspect, or they want to interview a suspect, and they want to know a little bit more about what the suspect's thinking or what's going on with them, and also maybe find out if some of the answers are deceptive or truthful. And so we can either do a live interview or we can analyze an existing interview and provide them with a report, give some information about the accuracy of the statements that are made by the subject of the investigation. And also a lot of times we pick up little emotional cues that may be of importance to the case, and so we always include those along with the report.
How does the suspect react to this when you say, oh, that's a lie? Do they just kind of cave in and admit something?
Well, this is an investigative-focused tool. It's not really there's some tools out there that LOMP uses to elicit confessions, and we're really not in the business of confessions. We're trying to establish the truth so that the law enforcement agencies can follow the truth to the facts and determine whether there's physical evidence or some other kind of evidence that will help better understand the case. So sometimes they will end up confessing because they're guilty, I imagine. But what this really does is it's a tool for a law enforcement officer. If they have 10 suspects, we'll help them narrow it down to one or two suspects. And if the one or two suspects are still talking, we can begin to put some color on the case and really better understand the context of what happened and who was involved and maybe where there's some physical evidence.
So you don't allow just anybody to do this to see if maybe their wife's cheating or something?
No. We sell the software to rural, state, federal, local, tribal agencies, and then we sometimes train a limited number of folks for research purposes and some other purposes on the software.
So if somebody wanted to get in touch with you about some of the things that you do, you have a website? Homeland Security Strategy, that's singular strategy, .com, and your email is on that website?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. So this is only in, like, government. You don't... How about private eyes? Do you allow them access to this stuff?
We have not gotten to the point where we've really looked into that. We've, frankly, been so busy with law enforcement and the federal agencies that we're working with right now that we haven't. I can tell you that there's one private investigator in the country who's been trained on it, and that is T.J. Ward out of Atlanta, Georgia. And he is a retired career law enforcement officer and a 20-plus-year veteran of the private investigative field and has absolutely impeccable credentials. And you may remember him. He was the private investigator hired by Natalie Holloway's family to go down to Aruba and investigate the case down there. And so he is the only private investigator in the United States who has this technology.
Were you able to help solve that case at all?
Well, I personally spent about 10 days in Aruba, and I was down there with TJ and some other folks. And I think, without getting into all the details of what the family went through, I think we were able to help the family understand a little bit more about what was going on and bring them some initial answers. I would agree with the basic theory that's been put out in the media by was recently the deputy police chief down in Aruba that detailed what they believe happened last night. But I guess what I would say is that the suspects that are being looked at, in my opinion, are the correct suspects, and that I believe eventually arrests will be made, or rearrests, I should say, and that hopefully we'll be able to find Natalie someday soon and get her to rest with her family.
Does this kind of analysis or interrogation hold up in court as evidence?
Well, again, layered voice analysis is an investigative focus tool that's supposed to be used in the very early stages of an investigation to help them identify suspects or clear suspects and hopefully lead to physical evidence. So you would actually take the physical evidence that you found with the search warrants into court with you. We have been in one court one time, and that was to verify the proffer statements of a confidential informant, and it turned out that the confidential informant was trying to distance himself from the criminals that he was informing on, and it turned out that he was in fact closely associated with them and he had been involved in the crime that was in question. So we basically just let the judge know that the suspect was being deceptive and was more closely involved in the case. So that was the only time we've been inside the courtroom with the technology.
Has any of the layered voice analysis been used on any of the bioterrorists or interrogations for like Homeland Security issues?
Well, I can't really get into a lot of details about the work we do with the federal government at this point. Other than to say that there's 10 federal agencies that are either using us or testing us in a variety of capacities, including some that are related to Homeland Security.
So if we were going to go down a list of what your company does, can you just give us a short checklist to do this and this and this and this?
Sure. What my company does is I consult on Homeland Security issues for private sector companies, and through those companies often get pulled into government agencies and projects that they're dealing with.
Okay, and it all deals with Homeland Security?
Yes.
And that covers a lot.
It does cover a lot. It keeps me pretty busy. Now, I can tell you that in my spare time, I have, over the last year, begun to use some of the advanced technologies that I've come across and apply them to some cold case and current ongoing missing persons and murdered person cases. So it's, I guess lawyers have pro bono work that they do, and this is sort of my pro bono effort to give something back and try to help these families and victims find some justice and some answers. So, but most of my professional work is Homeland Security based.
If someone comes up with an idea that they think would help with security or bioterrorism, would they just get in touch with you and you'd say, well, you need to get in touch with this person, or would you take this on as a project, or how would it turn around that somebody could be working through you for something that belonged in a Homeland Security genre?
Sure. Well, I would always be interested to hear from any of your listeners. My email address is listed on my website, homelandsecuritystrategy.com, and they can certainly email me, which is the best way to get in touch with me. And shoot me any ideas or thoughts or leads or tips or anything they might have, and I would try to get back with them. And I would, if it wasn't something that I could personally act on, I would try to find an appropriate person to pass it to.
So So this is just like project by project, that everything would be different or individual for each thing that someone brought to you.
Right.
What do you see from being an insider with the government as the number one priority for Homeland Security?
What do I believe it is, or what?
What do you believe it is? Did I throw you by that question?
No, it's just that there's so many priorities that are really important right now.
Security has to be number one. But are they looking for terrorists that want to bomb people? Are they looking at people who want to spread the anthrax or any bird flu? Or is that something that's a terrorist act? What are they really looking at?
There's a lot of priorities that include detecting, deterring, mitigating threats, and being prepared for emergency response and building all that. But if you did ask me the question, well, what do I think the top priority is? I personally think that the top priority for Homeland Security is to work with the other agencies, the intelligence agencies, and the FBI to develop better intelligence, and then have a system in place that's able to analyze the intelligence and put it to use before attacks occur. Just last week, I sat through the Zachariah Massawi trial, and it was made, if you recall, he's the person they called the 20th hijacker, or he was the student who was caught by the FBI trying to go through flight school before the 9/11 attacks. And the thing that just became abundantly clear was that there were loose pieces of intelligence out there, including his arrest prior to 9/11, that were missed. And even if they were discovered and figured out at a low level, there was a lot of problems getting the information to the right people and agencies working together. So I think there's just an overall need to develop the networks to collect intelligence and to be able to understand what they're seeing as it comes in and then get it to the proper people so that we can react to it in a timely manner. And I think with both 9/11 and some of the other attacks that we've seen over the years from Al-Qaeda, this ability to collect and analyze and act on intelligence would have made a great difference.
And you don't have to have the person right there. So you could have done the film for anybody that's on TV or that was talking to the public to see what was really going on?
Well, hindsight's always 20/20. I mean, certainly the technology could have been used in some cases, but it's going to take more than just any one technology. It's going to take a layered approach. It's going to take a proactive overseas intelligence collection effort, and then it's going to take the ability to get that intelligence back to the United States, get it analyzed, and get it in the hands of people who can take action on it.
Is that something missing from the Homeland Security plans that are going on now, that interweaving of the network?
No, I think that what you've seen over the last few years is a breaking down of some of the walls, the interagency walls that were created in the past, some of the rivalries, and you've seen a much more aggressive effort to begin focusing on creating intelligence, human intelligence networks, where they may have not existed or may have, worn down over the years as some of the intelligence agencies move towards a focus on technical and electronic intelligence collection. But I think everybody now clearly realizes that there's going to have to be a human intelligence collection capability. And it's going to take us several years, if not a decade or so, to build those capabilities out to the point where they protect us well enough to assure that nothing like 9/11 ever happens again.
When you say collecting intelligence, do you mean like taking the voice prints of these people and seeing if you can tell what's really going on? Does voice analysis have a part of all this?
I think it certainly does. There's a huge move out there right now to evaluate what they call open source intelligence. And a lot of actionable information is put out on the radio, on the television, in various formats where it could be collected and analyzed. And so there's certainly a major role for layered voice analysis in intelligence collection, or I would say intelligence analysis. You would actually use other tools to collect the sound. But once the sound is collected, then it could certainly be analyzed, and we could get some valuable insight.
What do you think of people who say poppycock? You can't get anything like that from their voice.
Well, I think that I would probably have them call you. You seem to pull quite a lot from people's voices, and it seems like you've been doing it for years.
Andrew, I was trying to get your opinion about what was going on. I think what's going to happen when people find out you can do this is they're going to just try to disguise their voice, you know, muffle it and put a synthesizer on it, because they're going to know that you really know what's going on.
I think this comes back to some of the work, you know, I'm not being funny, but I think it comes back to some of the work that you've pioneered over the years. And this technology also demonstrates that there's a wealth of information, both physical, emotional, psychological, all contained in the voice. And I don't think it's just our technology or just your technology, but I think a wide variety of technologies are going to begin to focus on the field of frequency and begin to develop some pretty exciting capabilities that not only are going to be used for things like intelligence or homeland security, but also, as demonstrated by your commitment and pursuit to human health, to human well-being and welfare, and really positive, helpful pursuits.
Well, one of the things that we're working on right now is we have all of the frequencies decoded for the bird flu and its activator and its proteins. So I need to talk to you later about how to get that to people. Because I think that's a really important aspect of it. We could have people go into a government building and everybody go to their computer and say, "Good morning, computer, this is my voice test." And that could be analyzed to see if there's any kind of pathogen or something in that building that might be detrimental. So that's kind of the direction we're going with it, sort of toward medical and evaluation, seeing what's happening. But certainly, since your whole mode is bringing together all of these different technologies, we certainly need to talk to you. And I bet there's a lot of people out there that have ideas that they want to bring to you.
I think it really, the more I study the science of frequency and meet other researchers and other pioneers who have developed an interest in this field, it's clear to me that the future is voice. Whether it's voice activated phones, voice activated homes, where you just tell the home what you want it to do, you tell the car what you want it to do. I know Microsoft is putting a lot of money into automobiles that will be voice activated or will have voice activated features. So
I think maybe it's going to be the other way around. You're going to go home and it'll say, you need some potassium. We're having potatoes for supper. Have you read any of the stuff that Pfizer's been doing? And they're doing biomarkers through VoiceNow, and they can look at new medications and really shorten up the time that it takes to see if there's going to be a side effect. There's a lot of voice analysis being done in China for heart effects and some of the things that it's not our stuff directly. It's some things we've been doing along the line. So we've got programs now that can template people, and we want to put that online. So if you're going to have a heart attack, that program's going to show you that you've got some stressors. So you're right. It's in there. Voice is going to be a tremendous part of the future, even for health and insurance. But as you're fascinated with what we're doing with health, I'm fascinated by what you're doing with this with security.
Right. And I think that what it really is it's a group of different people who have found different pieces of the same frequency puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
And the more we work together and learn about each other's arts and sciences, we're going to begin to unravel this, and we're going to be able to document it and build software and diagnostic tools that are going to begin really helping people. And to me, that's exciting. It's exciting that in the future, my child may be healed or diagnosed and healed just based on his voice.
Well, even with Homeland Security, our health and immunizations and is very much a part of keeping everyone safe. Can we just sort of change gears a minute and talk about Homeland Security and what it means to the individual? Because when we put out on our forum that you were going to be on the show, it was like we just had dozens of questions come in about what kind of rights are we losing? What are we gaining by Homeland Security and people really digging in?
Right. Well,
do you have an answer? I mean, I don't when they ask me.
Well, if you were going to ask my personal opinion would be that we have unfortunately been losing a lot of our privacy over the years. And we've been losing it for a long time. The fact that they keep credit databases and healthcare databases and insurance databases, all of these databases, which really strip our privacy away, were created long before the Homeland Security issue came up. And the databases that they're using to try to secure Homeland Security are basically these commercial databases in a lot of cases, as well as I'm sure some government information that's out there.
Even our grocery store.
Right. And so. Right. I think that I really don't think you can point to our country's effort to respond to the vicious terrorist attacks and the enemy that is out there. There is an enemy called Al-Qaeda. They are sworn to come after us. They're active. They wake up every day trying to figure out how to kill Americans. They feel like there's a several million person deficit that we owe them in terms of American lives that they're intending to collect on. And those are based on reports from Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda documents. So, I mean, we're facing a very dangerous enemy. And I don't think you can point to a country's effort to protect itself and say, oh, well, it's because of Homeland Security that privacy is gone or privacy is challenged. I think that a long time ago, company and collecting information on people and the internet and computers have made it a lot easier to maintain and collect the information. But we've seen scandals over the last few years of some of these data housing companies that have released information to the wrong people and how easy it is in some cases to get this information. And what we're really dealing with is, in my opinion, a point where information technology has caught up with the human's ability to create data that's collectible. And we're going to have to make some tough decisions as a society about whether we're going to let private companies, and in some cases the government, collect and hold and store and database information.
So you're saying we're trading privacy for security?
Well, that seems to be what's happening, but that is not what should happen. I believe that you can have privacy and security, and that's certainly the goal that I'm working towards. I've attended several, or most, I would say, of the Department of Homeland Security Information and Privacy Committee meetings. I'm actively involved. I work closely with former Congressman Bob Barr, who's an outspoken privacy advocate. And I believe privacy is a very important issue. And I fight for that. I fight for that right. You know, I don't think that we should have to give up privacy just because we don't want to be attacked by terrorists.
At the same time, it certainly is convenient to have your banking online, so you don't have to do it all in your checkbook. It's very nice to go to the grocery store and get a big discount because you're going to give me a little card. So we're trading that off for convenience and money at the same time.
Right. Certainly, people who want to enjoy the height of privacy can get a paycheck and cash it and go spend cash and not create any kind of data trail. They can limit their use of cell phones, which create travel and data and phone trails. And I mean, certainly there are ways to lead a more basic lifestyle that's based on a cash economy and limited communication and no internet use. And you can be someone who's free of the electronic trail. But
there's always a trade-off of putting a chip in your dog so you know where your dog is, but you don't want one on you or your kid.
Right. But unfortunately today, if you have an ATM card or you have a cell phone, you might as well have a chip in you because it's going to track you with GPS. It's going to track you with your tower signals. It's going to your credit card, of course. You know, all of that data is not only warehoused, but it's been sold to a variety of other vendors that are seeking information on people like you. So it's a tough world out there for people who really want individual privacy. But I really don't believe that the Homeland Security effort has anything to do, in all reality, with the loss of privacy in America. I believe it has a lot more to do with private criminal information warehouses and the information that they're collecting and selling.
Well, there's a lot of complaints about it. I just got an email today that talked about a letter being opened from friend to friend and had, here it is. Last month, Goodman, 81-year-old retired University of Kansas history professor, received a letter from his friend in the Philippines that had been opened and resealed with a strip of dark green tape bearing words by Border Protection and carrying the official Homeland Security seal. And you've got this whole underground going on about 911 didn't happen. They're going to blow up Texas now. A nuke that you can be quarantined for even having flu-like symptoms. You can be arrested for not getting your kids immunizations. I mean, there's so much that's out there that people are saying that Homeland Security is responsible for. Is that kind of underground shows incredible mistrust for the government and what the government's saying is true.
Well, I think that it's a mistrust that is fueled by, in most cases, occasional incidents that may have been inappropriate, and a media that just thrives on scaring everybody to death, whether you're watching one of the major news channels or the 24-hour news channels, these news outlets are making millions and millions of dollars running stories that scare people to death. And it's just creating this mindset and this irrational fear that all of a sudden, you know, there's going to be all this martial law and quarantine. And
it's not only in this country.
The truth is that all you have to do is turn the TV off and walk outside your door, and what you see for the most part is the same old America that has always been here. One where there's freedom, one where you're allowed to go live your life, and where, in general, people don't mess with you. And occasionally, there are times when law enforcement or government agencies make mistakes or overreach or do things that are inappropriate, but they're usually caught pretty quickly, and they're usually exposed by the media, and life goes on.
Well, fear is a real good one. It's just not really contained in the U.S. We got a call from the Republic of Georgia, old part of Russia. They said on, this guy said on his news media, they had told them that with this bird flu, there was 40% of their population that was going to die. And he was calling us to see if we had a way to help them determine through vocal analysis if people had been exposed to it. So it's just not here. It's everywhere. And I got a call, another call from Arkansas today from a university. And we were talking about some visitors that they were having in, I think, from Pakistan. And one of the things he said was the Pakistanis coming here think that we have incredible freedom, and on our side, we're complaining that we don't.
So, all right.
So at the same time, what are some of the things that you think people could do to help Homeland Security or to hinder it if they don't like it? And some of the things that they can do if a terrorist attack does happen.
Well, one of the things I'm doing is based on my experience being involved in the government's response to the Los Angeles riots and the anthrax attacks and Hurricane Katrina, which I worked on, and some of the other Homeland Security activities, is I'm actually in the process of writing a book that's going to talk about basic.
Hello, do you hear me?
I do hear you. Call us. Have a question for our guest.
I can barely hear someone on the other end. This is a very bad connection. I hope you can hear me. I just wanted to say that I don't listen to the media anymore. No one I know listens to the media. We don't get our news from mainstream media, because the media is owned by the same families that own the banks and own everything else. And we know all they're doing is pushing the neocon agenda. I'm sorry, but we don't trust our government. We don't trust Homeland Security. And, you know, maybe you people do, and maybe you believe in fairies. But we believe that history shows that when people get too much power, they use it to their own advantage. And I think that's what's happened in America. And I think it's very sad, and I hope you can change things in Homeland Security, because you sound like a nice man. But are you going to be willing to shoot Americans when things get really crazy here? That's my question.
John, did you hear that question?
I did hear the question.
I have one. Do you think the media is reporting accurately?
Well, let me just answer, I guess, the question first is, I don't understand the sense.
Hello?
Of her question. I don't understand a situation where I would be required to, or forced to shoot fellow American.
I can barely say.
So, it's an interesting question, but I wish she would have given me a scenario that would have been a little more detailed about a situation like that. For your question, what's your question?
Do you think the media is reporting accurately? Or you said they're scaring people.
I said the mainstream media is making a lot of money by hyping very negative stories and very fantastical angles that are, the exception to the rules and basically worst-case scenario, end-of-the-world stories. And more, I think that the good reporting is actually coming from this emerging community of bloggers and whistleblowers and internet reporters and with the diversity of the media networks where the more reporters there are, the closer you're going to get to the truth because that's one more person out there asking questions. And so if anything, I think that we're getting more and more accurate information, but it's not necessarily coming from the mainstream media. It's coming from these internet reporters and bloggers and whistleblowers that are putting information out on the internet where it can be seen and heard, whereas 20 or 40 or 60 years ago, if it didn't come from one of the three major networks, you were never going to hear it. So I think it's an exciting time for news reporting.
I absolutely love.
It's just not, the excitement's not coming from the major networks.
Okay, with the internet, the people have a say now, and that's what I like about it. And you can put in almost any word and get back information. You can do makeup words, but the internet, I think, has given us a freedom and a connection and a networking to each other that we just didn't have before. We had to depend on the newspaper to sort of network us.
The exciting thing is not only is the volume of information growing exponentially all the time, but so is the capability to then bounce that information against other information and network with other people and move forward more quickly. So everything, in essence, is accelerating.
Well, I want to make one comment, then I want to go back to your things about what people could do. We're very limited in time here, but we'll have you on again. But I think the caller might be talking about maybe gun control as part of Homeland Security. She said, would you be willing to kill other Americans when the time comes? And I'm not exactly sure what she meant by that, but we can address it at another session or another show, because I certainly would like to have you come back. We've got about 6 minutes or so. Can you go over these points that are going to be in your book, or is that something you don't...
Sure, I can go over a couple of the points. Before we were talking about the book that I'm in the process of writing based on my experience responding to real-world Homeland Security things, events and responses. And a couple of the things that I think are very important that people probably just don't think about is that I think the most important thing that people need to realize is that if something big happens, they need to be prepared to survive for anywhere from 3 to 30 days without water or new food. And I think that people, I remember my grandparents, they got caught in a hurricane in South Carolina a few years ago, about 15 years ago, and they had to survive for 2 weeks. These were 70-year-old people at the time, and they had to survive for 2 weeks in their house with trees busted through the roof with no clean water and the food that was in the house. And so even though these things sound basic, I think people need to think about surviving for 3 to 30 days with the resources you have available in your house. Another important thing is people should take advantage of the Red Cross classes that are available. First aid and CPR, it takes a weekend or so to get qualified. And if you can't get food or water for 30 days or a while in an emergency, how are you going to get medical treatment? People need, especially fathers and mothers with kids in the house, need to be prepared to administer their own treatment in these scenarios. What we're looking at are basic things that people need to do. And then I know we're running short on time, but I'll throw this last one out and we can get more into my book at a later time. Another thing is that when these emergencies occur, everybody wants to volunteer and jump in and help. And the problem is that volunteers have to be trained, like Red Cross volunteers, Salvation Army, and FEMA volunteers. They're all trained way in advance of events and emergencies. People who have it in their heart to participate in a response like that need to get out now when there's not an emergency and get the training, get organized, and get set up with these organizations so that they can be called out when the emergencies occur. So those are three quick tips. And even though they sound simple, based on my experience in real-world responses, these are things that people are not spending enough time on.
Well, one, we have a sonic apothecary little box with frequencies in it that can help set bones and has digitalis and all the things for heart. And we can actually help duplicate some medications for people with these little emergency boxes. But we call them, some people have taken them on trips with them. And one of the things I was concerned about, people don't know to take the water out of the tap and put it in a big container. They just don't think about that. They think they're going to turn on the tap and the water's still going to be there. So if you're selling them food and water, it needs to be stored someplace and stored in a safe place.
Right.
You were talking about three. Oh, Red Cross qualified. Absolutely a great thing to look at. But there's so much more that we need to talk about, John.
I'll be happy to come back anytime and chat with you some more and hopefully get some more callers.
One of the things I want to know about is if you know, or even if you can tell me, if there was any terrorist strikes that were averted by Homeland Security, or is that, you can't prove a negative kind of thing, but... That would be an exciting.
I think one of the more well-known terrorist attempts was that there was an individual who was caught at a border checkpoint in Seattle by a very alert Customs and Borders agent, and that person was bringing across explosive equipment and explosives to blow up something in Los Angeles, and that's been made public at this point. It happened a few years ago, but that was one of the successes.
Well, there's other things I want to talk about, like was 911 real and what you know about that, and about immunizations and that part in Homeland Security, and more about this bird flu project.
Sure.
There's so many people asking questions about this and not trusting their government. And to me, people need to move out of their complacency. And I think 911 did that. There's a wonderful group of people working night and day trying to help with this. But a lot of it's just falling on deaf ears because there's not enough of us collected and networked, like you say, looking at the inside out. I don't know if people are going to get this message I'm going to try to put across here, but I saw a cartoon last year that just summed this up for me and made me realize how Americans are complacent. It was a cartoon of two long-robed, turbaned men sitting out in the mountains by a fire, and they had a little portable television with them. And here was an American marching that his banner said, "You can't hug your kids with nuclear arms." And these people, these two turbaned people, were gambling, and their job was whoever won got to go cut off the arms of this guy that was picketing and marching. Now, that's such a difference in how we think, Americans, that we're going to protect our children and you can't hug them with nuclear arms, to very few Americans would sit and gamble to see who gets to cut off the guy's arm.
Right.
So we just need to turn around how we think. That's just incredible to me. And we're nearing the end of our time, and I usually try to...
I appreciate you having me on, and I would be happy to come back anytime and talk some more. It's been a delight.
Oh, we need to talk about so many other things, and I need to talk to you privately, too. Is there any last words you want to leave with people?
Well, I just appreciate the opportunity. I am excited to work in the area of emerging technologies, and I know that you do a lot of work. And it's hard sometimes to tell the story and get people to really open their minds and listen. But in a variety of different scientific fields, there's a lot of exciting activity. And I certainly feel that you're one of these pioneers in this area. So,
thank you. What we do is certainly complementary. Even what you do with V and what we do is so complementary. Well, for those of you, you had something to say, John?
No, I was just going to say that it's been a delight sharing some time with you.
Oh, well, we'll certainly have you back. Thank you. For those of you who were brave enough to stay tuned to listen to Alternatives Without Prejudice, bravo. To those of you who end up hating what we had to say tonight, that's great because we've touched you in some way, and that's what we really want to do. And we talked last week about success. Asking you what you thought of a success. Was it your power? Was it your money, your prestige, your possessions? Would you rather be successful than prevalent, or than relevant, I should say? But another thought to carry on with that, if you want to do something, you will. And if you don't want to do it, any excuse will do. And this is Sherry, and we'll talk to you next week.
Listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.